Welcome, everyone, to the International Black Summit interview series. The International Black Summit, for those of you who aren't aware, is an organization, a nonprofit organization that was created in 1991. And the purpose of the International Black Summit is for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. And we recently launched this podcast to provide people who are familiar with us and people who are not familiar with us an opportunity to get to know a little bit about us by interviewing current and past participants of the International Black Summit and facilitators of the International Black Summit to discuss with us how the International Black Summit has affected their lives and how they use the tools of the summit and the distinctions of their summit in their work, their careers, their lives, their families, and their communities. So thank you for being with us tonight. I'm Grace Lawrence.
And I'm Glenn Greenidge. Welcome to IBS Podcast. And without any further ado, I'm going to invite Mr. Ted Marsh to come on and be part of this podcast. Welcome, Ted.
Thank you, Glenn. It's always a pleasure to see you. I'm always in the right place when you're on the Zoom.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. So, Ted, would you give us a little bit of your background so that people have a sense of who you are and what you're up to in the world?
Sure, be happy to. Let me start from the meaningful part. First of all, I'm an escapee from the corporate plantation. I work for two major corporations, which I will leave unnamed, but they're recognizable in every household. So the journey for me started when I left the corporate environment and I went to work for a small business consulting firm, local here. And I also went to work for small business consulting firm. And I went to work for a Black consulting firm because I wanted to work with Black business. And so it's been an interesting journey. In 1990, I started my firm called Two Wing Communications. And I've been focusing on healing Black community, working in the Black community to heal racial and ethnic issues, and also bridging the gap between different organizations regarding communications. One of the things I had learned earlier was that almost 100% of the issues that companies dealt with were communications-based. And I thought that would be an excellent lane for me to operate in. And so I've been focusing on that up until the time I shut my formal part of my business down around 2016. I have 11 years as a Naval Reserve officer. I served 14 months in Vietnam with the Navy Construction Forces. And although I finished first in my class, my officer training class in seamanship and leadership, I never got a chance to actually serve on a ship. And I love the water, but working with the Navy CVs was a very rewarding experience. I actually learned a lot about my personal leadership style because 95% of the people who reported to me were white construction workers. And I learned a lot from that particular segment of the population. So that's what I did on the side as I was working to build my own business and to serve my community. In 1994, I started an organization called Northern California Black Employee Association, which brought together 42 corporate Black affinity groups in the Bay Area, and worked with them for about 7 years. Hosting a full-day conference every quarter. And what I came to grips with in working with those different organizations was how divisive different factions of those organizations were in terms of being resistant to actually leveraging best practices from one organization to another. And of course, I found that to be very frustrating when people were unwilling to share best practices only because they perceive employees from another corporation to be competitors, even though we were all of the same ethnicity. So in 1996, I started doing healing from enslavement retreats up at one of our local resorts, Bodega Bay, which is a beautiful area. And so I did that for 7 years. In 2003, I and my co-facilitator actually began hosting Black male support groups. We called it the Gathering of Black Men. And in that experience, I ended up actually authoring a Gathering of Black Men participant handbook. And I also created a Gathering of Black Men leader's guide. I give the handbook away, but in order to operate with the leader's guide, you have to go through some formal training, and you have to actually, I give away the leader's guide as part of the formal training, but it's not free. So I worked with that organization until 2010. In 2010, I was asked to be part of a founding organization called the Brotherhood of Elders. At that time, I had already been working to really define what community elderhood should look like. I did a lot of research and create a framework for community elderhood. And it was part of the consulting extension of my professional life, because I was asking three key questions. One, what's working in our community? Secondly, what's not working in our community? And then the third question was, what's missing? And one of the things that I came up with in terms of what was missing was community elderhood for both men and women. And so in 2010, I had the pleasure of working with Dr. Wade Nobles and Dr. Woody Carter and Dr. Kamani. They were part of my planning and development team as we put together a vetting and instillment process for community elders. And I still have that document today, and the pleasure, of course, working with those particular esteemed individuals.
Ted, I'm going to ask you, so when actually did you do was your first summit?
My first summit was in Memphis, and you probably could tell me which number that was. I actually flew into
2003.
Yeah, I flew into Little Rock and drove up to Memphis because Southwest did not have a direct flight. And then I did the Toronto summit that following year. So those were the two summits that I actually participated in initially. Now, since then, of course, I did the Detroit summit, and I did several of the virtual summits.
So, Ted, what had you decide? So I'm actually thinking Memphis might have been 2001. What had you decide to come to that first summit that you attended back in 2001?
Well, I knew Susan Shelton personally, and of course, two of our colleagues talked me into it. They had attended my Healing from Enslavement retreat. And as a result of going through that weekend immersion experience, is they thought the summit was a natural extension of the work that we had done at the Healing from Enslavement retreat.
And when you started going to these summits, was there, you know, what were the things that were most pronounced for you? The things that you initially took away from the summit that had you decide, I'm going to come back to more than one?
Yeah, the first thing is, and I have a wonderful sense in terms of the energy in the space. And I remember walking into the a major conference room in Memphis. And the moment I stepped into the space, it was like, oh, it just felt so much at home. And it was so welcoming, and there was love in the room. And that was the first thing I noticed. And then I was assigned in terms of the different groups when we did our breakout groups. I was assigned to a group, luckily, where Patricia Porter Reed or Reed Porter. Yeah, Patricia Porter Reed and two of the other founders were in my group. And so it was like, oh, the universe sent here. They sent me here at this particular time, this particular place. And for me to arrive a little bit late because I was driving up from Little Rock, that I got put into this elite group. And so we had a wonderful discussion, interaction, and I just felt love for the entire time I was in Memphis.
Ted, what were the distinctions that called to you that resonated with you?
I've listed out all 17, and it's very hard for me to remember which ones came first. The thing that probably stuck in my mind, first of all, was there was no out there. And that was consistent with my spiritual belief system.
Let me just share, as you continue to look at that, and we ask you a little bit more about that, Ted, I just want to share for the people who are listening on the podcast and who might not be familiar with the International Black Summit, what we mean by distinction. So the International Black Summit has what we call distinctions, which are terms or words that may be regular English terms or regular English words, but that we use them in a particular way. We define them, we distinguish them in a particular way, and we use them for our exploration in the conversation and for looking at life and engaging with life and with the world a particular way. So we call those things, those tools, distinctions. And one of our distinctions is no out there. Thank you, Ted.
So Ted, what about no out there was calling you? You said that it was tied into your way of being or your kind of your philosophy. Is that did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, my spiritual belief at the time was one, and it still is. Don't want to date. It still is. My spiritual belief is, first of all, is that the world that I live in is a projection of myself. And so the inside, my inner world and my outer world are just mirrors of one another. And so it allowed me to access power that says, you know, I can't blame something out there because I'm not separated from out there. And then it gave me access that says, oh, and I have the power to change it. So as I change internally, it gets reflected in the world that I get a chance to play in. So it also opened up new venues in terms of, because I'm an amateur philosopher, it also gave me access to new channels of thought and possibilities that I did not have access to previously. And so that was one that really stood out for me. And I like to play with words like not here, or nowhere, so on and so forth. I play with those enneagrams in terms of what's possible, and to gain access and insight from different points of view, try to expand my perspective. And as a communications consultant and a master coach, by the way, I jump past the master coach piece. As a master coach, I always elected to build the bridge from my client's side of the river rather than from my side.
And when you say master coach, you mean master life coach, right? As not like
a master life coach, yes. And of course, there were some experiences I had. I used to play basketball, and I also coached basketball. And so when I was in my 20s and 30s, I played and did coach basketball. So I was very familiar with the basic principles and tenets of teamwork, and also being able to motivate and align people on my team so that we could focus in on our common purpose. But in 1997, I made a decision, even though I was doing what I call small business consulting, in 1997, I made a decision to go through some formal coaching certification programs. And I did that locally with one of the San Francisco firms. And after I did that, I said, oh, well, that was very insightful. And I saw some personal growth, so I elected to go through two others following that in order to expand my skills, as well as the different approaches in terms of navigating this journey we call life.
Ted, would you say that the being in the summit has enabled you to expand some of your facility with life coaching and/or business coaching?
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that came up is goes up until and during my professional life, I had this habit of separating professional time from personal time, and many people get caught up in that. And so, after going through my life coaching experience, I recognized it was all personal time. You know, it was like, hey, this is mine, you know, and this doesn't belong to the company, and this doesn't belong to, this is mine. It's all mine. And it allowed me to treat it as sacred. And I've come to learn that, you know, time is one of my most sacred and valuable assets. And it's up to me to manage this. And I can, you know, filter it away or flit it away. Or I can treat it as a sacred entity that it really is.
Let me ask you this, Ted, because your background is so expansive, and you've touched on so many things from the military to business to life coaching and small business coaching or the corporate world, all of those things. Now that you have participated in the summit multiple times, I'm curious, when do you... Given all of the breadth of the tools that you have, when do you reach for the summit tools rather than other tools that you have?
Well, actually, I integrate them all. And that's the magic of it. It just reinforces and makes available how I can choose to show up. And recognizing that many of my clients have different needs, desires, expectations, you know, I can change my language in order to accommodate the needs and the perspective from my client's perspective. And that's what I meant by building the bridge from their side of the river. So, and I wanted to elaborate in terms of coaching, because that term has become more common in the last 10 or 15 years or so, is the original approach that I was taking along with my colleagues who were going through the training at the time. Our responsibility is not to guide people in terms of what their life journey is. Our responsibility is actually to ask those questions that allows their life purpose to show up in them. And so consequently, the solutions and answers that they're seeking already lies within them, and the art and the skill of life coaching actually is for us to pull that out of them. So it's like, hey, I don't have any answers. I don't have answers for you. I'm still struggling with the answers for me, but I have some great questions. And the magic of those questions is I can ask questions of my clients that they're unwilling to ask of themselves. And in that process, open up new windows for them to take a look through and new lenses from which to operate. That gives them greater access to their own power.
Thank you for that, Ted. You know, as we said at the beginning of the session, the reason that we created this interview series was really to have an opportunity to find out how participants or facilitators of the International Black Summit have used the tools and distinctions in their lives and careers. And so I'm curious, looking at your life and career, have you noticed or can you think of any specific times where you have used the summit tools and distinctions in a particular situation?
Yes. I was trained as an engineer. And so much of my career in corporations was to, of course, identify problems and then find the solutions to those problems. In fact, I had probably gone overboard in terms of being a troubleshooter. And so I love finding problems, solving puzzles, so on and so forth. But I got locked into what I identify now as binary thinking. After a while, everything started to look like a problem. So, you know, it's like I got caught up into saying, oh, that's a problem. Oh, let me go try to fix that, you know. And so the distinction, no right way to be, you know, popped up in terms of, I can't fit that into binary thinking. No right way to be. So for me, it was like I started to see the world through a different lens. It's like, hey, there's nothing wrong with the world. The world is perfect as it is. And my spiritual teaching, of course, is, you know, that was consistent with my spiritual thing. The world is perfect as it is. It's just how we show up. And how I was able to integrate that in terms of there's no out there. World was perfect as it is. It's a projection coming from me, and that any drama or difficulty that I'm experiencing, not only am I creating it, but I also have the response. I have the sufficient response to actually address whatever issue or discomfort or problem that I was engaging in at the moment. So that made the world shift for me. So that was another way that I was able to integrate. Again, this is extremely important, is for me to be able to hook those distinctions, those key distinctions, on something that shows up for me perhaps in the past or in the present, and to be able to view it from a three-dimensional perspective rather than from a two-dimensional perspective. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
You know, it's interesting because you've identified two distinctions so far from the International Black Summit that have made a difference. And in one being there's no out there, and the other being no right way to be, these two distinctions. And we're not going to get deeply into them tonight, but we do as in our International Black Summit events and programs. But as you were speaking, I was also hearing a couple of other distinctions that you may or may not have been actively using, but I hear in what you were sharing. I hear the summit distinction, ownership. For me, I really heard that in what you were sharing. And I also heard the summit distinction, self-generation. I heard that as well in what you were sharing, self-generation, that distinction. So I think
may I speak to those? Because the ownership piece is really important. And the metaphor I use even in my consulting business is that unless I take ownership, it's very difficult to change anything. And you know, it's like I use the metaphor in terms of if I go out and rent a car, particularly if I'm out of town, like I never check the oil. I never even checked the windshield washer, you know, regardless of what the climate is. It's just, I just don't take ownership of it. It's like, hey, that's somebody else's car. But I recognize that the way I treat my own automobile is the way I treat my life. And it gave me access to say, oh, well, you know, as long as I'm saying, hey, the problem with the US government is, you know, I'm actually putting it into the realm of a rental car. They need to do something to change the oil in that rental car, you know, and it takes away my connection to it. And so just by saying, oh, I'm going to treat this as if I own it because it shows up in me in order to be able to see it in others. And when I treat it in me, and this was very important when we were doing the summit in Detroit, and we talked about triggers and filters and the authentic self, you know, it what really showed up for me was getting access to my filters. Now, I already understood what triggers were. And I'm going to use this as a demonstration. Right there in the Detroit Summit, it was like, I put these lenses on. And I said to myself, oh, these are polarized lenses. They're blocking out what's available for me to see. Now, it's like, okay. Now, that's actually a mechanical example of my filters. And I noticed whenever I put my polarized sunglasses on, I couldn't read my watch because my watch also, the watch face was polarized. And so it gave me access that says, oh, so, you know, I operate with these emotional filters all the time. And there's a way for me to bypass those filters. And so I can, again, it got tied into my professional life in terms of saying, oh, so how many filters do I employ when I'm talking with my client, when I'm working with my client? And once I learned how to drop those filters and bypass them or bypass them, is it gave me greater access to the spirit of my client, as well as being able to connect with them spiritually, from my spirit to theirs. So, and I came to realize, and I concluded, I said, oh, if there was a way for all of us to bypass our filters, what would our relationships look like then? And so it just opened up all kinds of possibilities for me.
Ted, you know, you talked a lot about leadership and a lot of the distinctions, or I heard in those distinctions that they open up leadership. What would you say to someone who is looking at doing the International Black Summit would be some of the advantages or some of the things that it would get around leadership?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I want to distinguish that word, leadership, because many of us, particularly those of us who escaped from the corporation, is we still view leadership as a position. And what I got open to is leadership is not a position, it's a relationship. And so I have a relationship with my clients. I have a relationship with the people that who have worked with me and the people I've worked with. And the context of that relationship actually defines what leadership is. And so, you know, it just opened up all kinds of exposure to, first of all, I've been conditioned and programmed to fit into a toxic environment. And I needed to actually re-examine my whole vocabulary. And so, when I talk about leadership today, it's always in the context of at least one other human being in terms of how are we relating to one another. And, you know, for both of you, you understand that, you know, once I became a community elder, is I actually took on the address of being Baba Tidmar. And I was looking for not just people in my network to address me as Baba Ted Marsh, but also members of my family, such that even my wife now more often than not calls me Baba. So it's you know, it's a mindset that is a reflection of the behavior and the relationship that we have, more so than, oh, this is a set of letters behind my name.
You know, I think that's so interesting when you talked about the mindset there, Ted. You know, I do also relate to how the summit distinctions can support an empowering mindset, right? Really giving us the tools to actually adopt a mindset that is most fulfilling to us, most aligned with what we're committed to, most in sync with the future that we're out to create, you know, all of that. So looking at leadership from the relationship perspective of leadership, as opposed to leadership just being power and control, and also looking at leadership from self-leadership, which is what you've been demonstrating in your conversation tonight. Self-leadership, stepping into the role of leader out of self-leadership, out of self-generation, out of ownership, and then taking that out into your family, into your community, in relationship as well. Like how these different aspects all intertwine and become possible out of what you talked about, mindset and the tools that actually enable us, empower.
Yeah, and let me talk a little bit more. Thank you for opening up that channel for me. So I became aware that I have talents and skills that were locked in drawers that I have never opened. And so
what had you become aware of that? Because I'm thinking perhaps the distinction noticing.
Yeah. So there were several things that simultaneously occurred. It's very difficult for me to even call one out. I was seeing behavior and relationships within the senior facilitator group that it was like I was in awe of. And I'm the person who takes ownership. So it's like once I see it in somebody else, it's like that's available to me too. You know, and it's like, so I want to go and be around that person. And perhaps some of that rubs off on me, because even though it may be not as practiced and as amplified in me, the seed is already there, you know. And so it's like the fact that I'm aware of it now. And so, you know, I had an experience when one of the senior facilitators were that Glenn is close to, where it was like, people just gave her stuff, you know, and so she had this quality of attracting money. And I remember going into a little convenience store and she had left her purse in our car, and it was like going to the convenience store. And so she picked things up and put it in the basket, and she got to the counter and it was like, oh, I don't have my purse. I left it in the car. I'll be right back. And the cashier said, oh, no, lady, you know, I'll bag it up for you. You don't have to go get your purse. And it was like, I saw that. And I said, oh, I want that in my life. It's like, what is that? That never happened to me. So it's like, I want that in my life. I want folks I want to be open enough and receptive enough to receive. And it took me back, you know, 20 years. Where I was doing all this support for a whole lot of people, but I was closed in terms of receiving support from others. So one of my dear friends and colleagues said, asked the question, are you open to receiving? And it was like, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So anyway, I'm getting back to the toolbox. It was like, oh, I got some locked drawers. I need to go check some of those drawers and see what else is available. And so the more I was watching people who are very effective and making an impact, the more I noticed that, I was able to tap in that seed. It sits in me also. It's just that I didn't know it was there. And so if I nurture it and water it and treat it, and because now that I'm aware that it's there, is I can actually access that particular tool, or we call it skills and talents. I can access that now that I know I have it. And so I do that actually with my clients too, is once I see that they have a special gift or talent, is I call it out And then I asked them the question you just asked me is, you know, how do you employ that? It's like, what are you talking about? That particular gift that I noticed that you have, that quality that you have a quality where people automatically are attracted to you. How do you actually employ that in your life in order to bring a fulfillment or carry out your life purpose, so on and so forth? And so just by calling it out, you know, we actually bring it into existence. And that's one of the carry forwards in terms of being part of the International Black Summit. So, initially it looked like magic to me until I realized that we all have it. We all have access to it. And once we understand that it's available to us, then it's no longer magic. And I can tap into it at will. And so that's how my life actually got enriched in the unfolding, in terms of opening up some of those locked drawers that I had hidden away and getting rid of this binary thinking, which my engineering training had conditioned and programmed me to see the whole world as a problem to be fixed.
Ted, you talked a little bit about eldership I want to hear a little bit more about that area and how the summit has also opened that up for you, because it sounds like there's no part of your life that's been untouched by the International Black Summit. And I think eldership is something that that I would hope that we all would like to get to, but a lot of us don't know a whole lot about it. And you've done some work around eldership and is still doing some work around eldership. So would you share some of those insights with us?
Initially I got struck by the bug of what is an elder and why is it that a certain cultures and certain societies function more effectively than others? And why is it here in the United States that once an individual is over 50, we set them out to pasture? You know, it's kind of like their income plateaus and we set them out to pasture. And it's like, why do we do that? If in fact we actually subscribe to this thing called wise people, wise men, wise women, shamans, so on and so forth. It's like other cultures don't seem to do that. So I got very curious and I started investigating and defining how would that look here in the United States as a countercultural kind of thing. As I did my exploration, I realized, that's what's missing is the passing on of the wisdom. A group of people who elect to become elders, who can actually operate outside of the formal political structure that provide a trusting, authentic, high integrity, high character guide that others will come to in order to eliminate doubt and bring clarity in their speaking. And so that's what me and my team focused on we met every week for 2 years. And it was generally 3 to 4 hours. And we really set in the inquiry of what does that look like here in the United States, and specifically what it would look like for Black Americans here in the United States. And so we did all the meditation and stuff, and eventually we came up with, you know, a framework. And so we identified it was going to take 24 months for a candidate who had to be over 60, a candidate to actually complete the vetting process. And because I was over 60 at the time, and I had gone through many of the rites of passages that we had identified in the vetting process, it gave me a certain insight and clarity. Now, two of the individuals went on to actually become shamans and elders from an African tradition. I have not done that. I actually used the vetting process and the instrument process that we had created here in the Bay Area. And but what it allowed me to see is that, one, we have all the resources we need as Black Americans in order to address all of our needs. You know, we generate $1.3 trillion in revenue every year. We have access to the internet, which means that we have infinite access to all the information that's available. We have the communications channels that are available. And what we noticed, of course, is there are pockets and silos all across the country where folks are doing the same work. And it's kind of like, oh, well, what is, how does that work? If in fact we were not operating in silos, but we were experiencing what we had noticed occur in the Harlem Renaissance era and in the expatriates who lived in Paris in the 1920s and the 1930s, how would that occur today? How do we manifest an environment and create a space to leverage that creativity that those particular two experiences did? So coming into the International Black Summit gave me access to that. So with the senior and the rest of the facilitator body just being in conversation with those individuals created that kind of setting for me. It was real. It was non-hierarchical per se. And the alignment and the support in terms of the behavior created a model that I could carry back to my men's group networks, to my local Brotherhood of Elders network here locally, my Black Coaches network, just emulating what I saw occur with the International Black Summit's facilitator body.
Just to give a little background again for people who may be listening around that interaction. So the International Black Summit has an annual event, the first full weekend in August every year, in addition to a prerequisite course and other courses and programs. And at that event in the past, there were an original set of five original facilitators, the senior facilitators of the summit. So I'm assuming, Ted, that you're referring to them and that the facilitator body, members of the facilitator body are trained inside the summit structures to lead the conversation at the annual event and at our other programs to lead the conversation both from the front of the room and the back of the room. And the conversation is led in a collaborative, in the moment, engaging process where there is no single instructor at the front of this at the front of the room. It is a dynamic, flowing process in which each facilitator steps in the moment to give the conversation what is coming to the conversation through them. And for me, I agree, Ted, for me, it was a new experience. And so being able to witness that and take that that kind of collaborative facilitation and leadership into other spaces. So just to give people who are listening a bit of a sense of what you're referring to there.
Yeah, and let me also add that as a facilitator, what you're doing is listening. So you're listening the space, you're listening for what's being brought up in the room. And the facilitator, I always have to quote my buddy Oren, who is also a facilitator. We have nothing to give you, but we're in the conversation listening. And together, the collaboration that Jackie Grace just talked about, that collaboration is that we learn together. We hear something newly in the conversation as we're both listening. So I, as a facilitator, I'm gaining something, as well as the listener or the person that we're engaging with is also receiving some insights and some information that, as you heard earlier, that Ted talked about opening up some spaces that he hadn't realized that were there. I know that for myself, when I'm facilitating, there are times when I find a new insight, even into the distinctions that we've been using for years and years, because in that moment, in that space, there's something else available newly. And that's the part of the discovery is so eloquently received and passed around. And whether you're sitting in your seats or you're standing at the mic, engaging with the facilitation at the front of the room, you're receiving nuggets of insight that help you to open up. So I just wanted to just kind of underline that conversation, because it's not something that I see or have seen anywhere else. Not that it doesn't exist, but not on the consistency that occurs inside the International Black Summit. So we're talking about Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday for the annual summit event that this is occurring, that the conversations are being engaged. And these are conversations that are coming from the body of people in the room. I might also add that we also have, not only do we have the adult space, but we also have the youth space and we have the young adult space, who are simultaneously occurring in different locations on site and or virtually, as we are pandemic virtually occurring as well. And so these conversations are being established and integrated into different levels of conversation: youth, young adult, and adult.
I give you it back mentioned to you. Something, Glenn, that yes. was really critical, and that is the power of listening. And again, it's in my relationship with the facilitator body that I got clear about the power of listening. And what I was bumping up against, which is another distinction, what I was bumping up against was, the always listening in terms of the script that I operate from, because I consider myself to be a pretty bright person, and I'm logical and rational in my thinking. And I had this conversation with my brother last week, and he's still in that binary mold. But the emptying out, emptying out and then listening for something different to show up was very critical. And what I found in this very loving, safe, sharing, aligned environment was new perspectives would pop into that emptying out. And the metaphor I use, particularly with my clients now, I said, you know, once a year I go in and clean out the garage. And I always discover something, you know, in cleaning out the garage. But I always had difficulty because I'd stop and I'd look at it and I'd say, oh, yes. And this took me back, you know, it's an emotional journey in the past every time you pick up something that has emotional value to you. So I recognize I'll never get this garage cleaned out if I stop and revisit all the stories attached to each one of the items, and like going to your attic, you know. So I came up with a different approach, which was, let's empty everything out of the garage, put it in the driveway. And that's the emptying out metaphor, you got it? And now I'm just going to put back into the garage those things that I have used, or those things that I've used in the last 6 months. If I haven't used it in the last 6 months, it stays out in the driveway. And so, you know, the metaphor and the distinction of emptying out is extremely critical for us to kind of clean out our belief system. Because, you know, our belief system are just there to protect us. It is not the truth. It's not factual. It's just something that I have adopted in my coping process. When I talk about coping, I'm just talking about maintenance. And my coping process to keep sane. And so the emptying out distinction and the listening to allow something different to show up was, again, initially magical. Until, you know, I adopted it as a regular tool that I can use particularly when I'm faced with difficult decisions.
The direction, the clearing out, or the distinction clearing, is what Babatet is pointing to. And we use that particular distinction to self-evaluate, to look to see, are those tools, are those things working in life? And as Babatet said, what's working, or what he's used recently that's worked, he puts it back into his garage, or we put it back into our life. And the things that are not working, we discard of. But we're constantly looking and self-evaluating, is it working? Is this giving me the best of me? And so there's constantly looking and constantly changing and constantly expanding where I'm looking from inside of the conversations, network of conversations that are part of this conversation.
And part of the distinction clearing, and it's only part of it, for me, is both the physical clearing that you talked about, Ted, but also the mental clearing, like a process of mentally emptying out, a process of emotionally clearing out. And so being able to clear on all of these different levels, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual, and you talked earlier, and the physical, you talked earlier, Ted, about the inner reflecting the outer, a cluttered mind and cluttered emotions being reflected out in a cluttered garage, perhaps, all of that kind of thing. So, part of this is also making me wonder, not just this last conversation, but this whole session tonight is having me wonder about your vision. One of the things that we say, and the purpose, actually, let me speak, the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the Black community and the world. So, Ted, are you present to what your vision is? And if so, can you share it with us?
Oh, yeah. I'm really clear in terms of my life purpose, why I came to the planet. And all my past experiences, of course, directed me. It took me a whole year of meditation to get clear until I was in one session. I was conducting one session, and one of my participants stood up and said, "Oh, it doesn't take a year." it was like, it only takes a few minutes. So he introduced me to a process where I could actually review what I had meditated on for you, and it turned out to be absolutely in alignment. And so I was able to use that. But my life purpose is to actually provide access to my to the Black community, the power that they already are. It's not like, hey, here's what you need to go get. There's nothing to go get. You're already very powerful. You're already creating the world in which we operate. And so my life purpose was to bring that awareness to the Black community in which I reside and influence. And so that became my vision. My latest
just to get clear on that for myself. So when you say I'm clear that that's your purpose, and when you then see a vision, do you actually see a vision for the Black community in the world? Is that it's all powerful, or what do you see inside of that vision?
The focus in my vision is the awareness piece, which is the step number one. And so I was going to say the subset that I'm operating from now is to actually to create a campus of healing that takes us through the five steps. There may be a lot more. It's just the ones I've identified so far. The five steps of working from a mindset of surviving and coping into a full access to thriving and flourishing. And so my current vision is that we have a campus, a center where individuals can come and gain the necessary, first of all, the necessary awareness, and then secondly, the training to to nurture and create those skills and hidden talents that are available to them such that they can become transformational change agents in each one of their communities. And so that's how it shows up for me as we speak today. And that's the one I'm sharing with many individuals, given that that's a real possibility in my lifetime. But again, from a legacy standpoint, is my goal is to, what is the next 10 generations have to deal with? And I, as a community elder, how am I actually positioning what I leave behind in terms of my legacy to address some of the needs of the next generation, the next 10 generations? And that's where I think the vision is very critical, to look beyond the horizon, look beyond what is possible, look beyond in terms of what is doable today, because I access this ownership piece in terms of I can create whatever I choose to create. And that's the possibility that I'm operating in to establish that kind of legacy that can be carried forward. Now, part of that goes right back to working with other individuals who may continue to carry forward that vision. And that's why the alignment is very critical. Carry forth and manifest that vision after I'm gone. And to recognize that others have done that allowed me to do this work, and that I have an obligation and responsibility to till the ground for others to follow behind me.
Thank you. That's great. Ted, I know we've been having a very heavy intellectual conversation tonight. I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to let people know that we do have some fun at the summit as well. So do you have any funny things that occurred? I know you talked a little bit about the cashier and so forth earlier. Would you like to share anything funny or fun that you've discovered at a summit or even after your summit participation?
Well, you know, one of the things that keeps flowing from me today is just an insight around what pulls people. And so I identified the cashier experience that I had. I also had an experience with one of the facilitators where went to one of my favorite restaurants, didn't make a reservation. And of course, talked to the maitre d', put my name in. It's like 45-minute wait. And okay, can we go sit at the bar? And then after we spent about 5 minutes at the bar, maitre d' came over and said, "Hey, your table is ready." The people were still in line behind us. And it was like, so one of the people in line said, "Oh, we were here before those, we were here before that couple, you know?" And it was like, and the maitre d' said, "No, you weren't. No, you weren't." It was like, "No, this couple was here first." And it was like, I recognized, see, this was the magic that was showing up. And it was like, wow. Get, okay. So it's not unusual for me to be wearing my Jedi outfit tonight. That was a Jedi experience. But, you know, I have a slew of those experiences in terms of the power that is available to us, that we shape the space. We shape and create the space such that people and events serve our interests when we are in that clearing that we spoke about earlier. And so, again, the first time you experience it, it's like, "Oh, what happened? That's magic." And it's like, until you realize it's available to all of us. And so I laugh about that today. At the time, I was like, "How did that happen? That never happened to me before," you know, and then to be in the presence of the awesomeness in terms of what's available to us once we access that clearing that we spoke about. So yeah, that was fun for me. That was fun for me. If I can take ducats away, and because I'm a committed learner, I still take classes at the local community college, and so, you know, that's really what feeds me. And, you know, to be in the presence of caring, loving, like-minded folks who do not bring a whole lot of baggage in terms of distrust and crabs in the barrel. And I don't want to even bring that into this space, but it was like what I would normally bump into if I just walked into one of the hotels downtown San Francisco in a conference room, is, and to feel that energy, the diversity of energy in there. It's, I don't experience that when I'm with the body of the International Black Summit. It's like, it's all loving, supportive. There's no contention that I have ever experienced. Just feels like home. Just feels like home, you know. And even though I may take a vacation, it always feels great to walk through the door coming back home. So that's what I find to be fun. And to meet people like you and Jackie and others and establish these relationships that you know that you're honored and appreciated and respected and not criticized.
So I hope that other couple got a table pretty quickly.
Well, you know, the rest of that story we actually concurred that the other group was there before us. We disagreed with the maitre d', and we said no, they were there first. And then so my partner had to go to the restroom, and the New Yorker who was complaining the most, he came over to me and whispered into my ear. He said, "Your wife is so regal." It was like, and this is from a New Yorker, right? It was like, so he, 1 second before, he was really pissed off that we were given preferential treatment. And then the next second, when we concurred, you know, it was like, yeah, they were there. They were here first. We're still sitting here. We're not in a hurry. And he came over and he just whispered in my ear. He said, "Oh," he said, "she is so regal." It was like, it was magical again. It was like to get a compliment from one of them diehard downtown New Yorkers. Unsolicited?
Unsolicited. Well, no. Actually, it was solicited. You know, it's kind of like our declaration for this year. When I allow space, I become present to who I am. And inside of that who I am presence, they also got who you were as well. So it
true.
Was...
true.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else for you, Jackie Grace, before we wrap up this evening, this wonderful conversation?
I don't think so. Well, let me ask you this. You know, we're coming out of the pandemic. What's the biggest lesson that you got coming out of the pandemic? What's the biggest lesson?
Well, you know, my wife, who is a college professor, was forced to work from home. So our dining room became her new office. And ordinarily, I would say, being stuck in the house with her, it was like I'm either getting on her nerves or she's getting on my nerves. But it actually has brought us closer together. But again, she's been to an International Black Summit. So she's had the experience of, we have a common foundation in terms of both completing the forum, going through the Black Forum, as well as going through the International Black Summit together. So we're just really grounded. She was expressing to me just this morning, she said, "You know, I just want to acknowledge you that you're just the perfect spiritual partner for me." And it was like, oh, I thought she was going to ask me to go clean out the backyard.
You mean part of the honey-do list?
I just knew she had something that I had promised to do and hadn't done. And and she just said, you know, need to talk. And, you know, when your wife says, we need to talk, we know what that's code for. And you know, she just laid it out this morning and says, you know, I'm going to be doing some additional work, and I just want to acknowledge you. You're just the perfect spiritual partner for me. And I said, likewise. I said, you know, I've been with you longer than I've been with any other human being other than mom. And I just wanted to acknowledge you that I care about you more today than the day I met you.
All right. Okay.
And so
that's
beautiful. And so we create this loving space together.
Awesome. Awesome. Jackie Grace is going to give you the dates of the annual meeting for this year, but we want to let you know that we do have every first full weekend in August is when we have our annual event. And that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And this year, as we've done in some prior years, we're also going to have a prerequisite course on the Thursday. So okay. Thursday in the day, we'll have a prerequisite course. There's an additional fee for that. And that's a way of grounding you and really getting you full ready for all of the conversations in the course that are going to happen in the weekend. And then, of course, we have a fabulous, fabulous Thursday night evening event where you can invite people who are not eligible to participate in the International Black Summit, but can come as your guests that night to just get an experience of what it is. So we oftentimes have people that are of not Black African descent come in and check in and be with us and get an opportunity to find out a little bit about the International Black Summit. But it also is an opportunity for people who have not done the International Black Summit to get a sense of it before it starts so that they can then register and get inside the conversation for the full weekend. And again, remember that there are three groups that are occurring at the same time. So we have the adults, 18 and above. We have the youth from 8 to 17. That's the youth summit. And then the young adult are from 18 to 35. So those are the age groups. And the young adults could actually participate in the young adult summit, or because they're over 18, can also be part of the adult conversation. But we find that the young adult space is one of nurturing and looking at, you know, early on in your career and so on and so forth. And in fact, I've got to give you the heads up on this. I actually discovered that conversation when we were in Africa. And in Africa, you're a youth up until you're 35 because they feel like you haven't developed all of the skill sets that you need to be fully functional. And so with that and some of the youth who had aged out created the young adult space. So the young adult space is a very effective space as well. So I'm going to give it over to Jackie Grace to give you the dates of this year.
Okay. Thank you for giving me enough time to look that up, Glenn.
and I want to thank Ted. Thank you so much for being part of this podcast. This is our third in the series.
I did a wonderful job. Thank you.
Phenomenal.
So much,
phenomenal.
Ted. Oh, thank you. I'm going to go down and watch my Warriors play.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for being with us, Ted.
Keep your fingers crossed. We need it.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Thanks,
Good
night. Ted.
Good night. Good night. So, as Glenn was saying, we do have an annual summit event each year. That's in addition to having other courses and programs. And the annual summit event this year will be held from August 4th to August 7th. The Thursday, as Glenn said, will be the prerequisite event for people who have not attended an International Black Summit before. You can attend the prerequisite event to be eligible for the International Black Summit. The Thursday evening, as he said, is a free host event that's open to everyone, whether you're attending the event or not, whether you're of Black African descent or not. And if you're interested in attending the opening host event that night, you can check out our website at blacksummit.org. The information will be up there by July. And so I think that's it for tonight. That's August 4th to August 7th, 2022. And so let's complete with our declaration, the declaration of the International Black Summit.
Okay. Let's see, do I have it up here? Let's get it up.
I'm going to bring it up on screen. Great.
Yes.
While you're doing that, I just want to thank the live audience for being with us this evening, supporting us, putting your comments in the chat as we engage in this interview tonight with Baba Ted Marsh. We appreciate the support. There's definitely a difference having you with us and having the energy of that space. We appreciate all of you who are with us right now.
The Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991, June 5th, 2022, to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west, above, below, and within, and wherever people of Black African descent reside. Let us all have a moment of silence, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you. And thank everyone who's listened to tonight's session. We're thankful and grateful that you were with us tonight, and we hope that you'll join us next time. Have a great evening. Good night.